Hi, everybody, and welcome to Invested. I'm Danielle Towne. Today, we're going to play one from the vault for you because it's on inflation, and that's on all of our minds these days. So check this out, enjoy, and we'll be back next week with more Mungerisms. Enjoy inflation. Thanks, everybody. Bye.
Hey, everybody, this is Phil Towne.
And this is Danielle Towne.
And we're here for the Invested podcast.
Where we...
Everybody who's listened to this thing for 180 times knows exactly what I'm going to say, kind of.
We've gotten so many emails from you guys going, God, we love the podcast. We love the content. We love you guys. Mm-hmm. But maybe the intro could use a little tightening. Everyone's so nice about it, you all.
I think if we were professional, we would have a really tight, and there'd be some music. We'd have music.
Oh, God, Dad. Our intro music, it's not good. It's not
okay.
Good.
Let's just say that what this podcast is about investing the way I've done it 30 some years, the way Danielle's learning how to do it. She's my daughter. And my humble opinion is that this is really just investing. This is what investing is. Mm-hmm. That you figure out the value of the business based on a pretty good idea of what the future cash flows that you're going to be able to put in your pocket are. And you pay some value of that. You some amount today that you're willing to pay for all of that in the future. That's the basic idea. And that leads us brilliantly to continue in our discussion of owner earnings, which is not going to be found in your accounting book.
Oh my, I loved that segue. All right. Bitcoin.
Since in my humble opinion, basically no one understands Bitcoin.
That is clear by your tone of voice.
Right.
So, no, and I don't understand Bitcoin either, but I know exactly why that guy thinks he understands Bitcoin, whoever that guy is.
Good.
And I understand the perspective, and I get why so many people think they understand Bitcoin and don't understand burrito making, as you put it. Right. So, the reason is that Bitcoin is a currency. And they can understand a currency, and they can understand that it's an electronic currency that's not controlled by any government. That's what they understand. They don't understand the value of it. They don't understand why it's going up and down, but they understand what it is and how it works, and that it's something that they think is going to be useful in the future.
And so when people Jamie Dimon and Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger say things like, I think in Munger's view, roughly speaking, paraphrasing, you're an idiot if you put your money into Bitcoin. That's roughly Charlie Munger.
These guys don't know who Jamie Dimon is or Charlie Munger.
Runs JP Morgan. Dimon is like perpetrating a fraud. That's Bitcoin. People who think it's a currency, and I don't understand Bitcoin. So maybe it is a currency. Maybe it isn't a currency. Maybe it's just a fancy way of checkbooks. I don't know. But what I do know is some really smart people are saying very clearly that either Bitcoin's full of crap or they simply don't understand it at all. So what I'm wondering is how these other people think they get it, that it's a currency, number one. And number two, in other words, a currency is something that you can hold value in and exchange it for goods and services. I suppose you can, basically. Although in the New York Times, I saw that it took some guy 12 hours and $88 to buy a pizza with Bitcoin. So
yeah, and obviously it's not accepted everywhere. But that's you're going into a level of logic that people who say things like, I can't understand stocks, but I understand Bitcoin, do not go into.
Right.
So I completely agree with everything you're saying.
Okay, far out. So when we say we understand something, and when we're talking about investing our hard-earned money, what we should mean by that should mean something, right? And what I think it should mean is that you understand it as a business that you can put a value on, or anything, a thing you can put a value on, and that value will be retained over time or even increase in time.
Yeah.
And that's where, to me, it's like just Bitcoin just comes off the rail. I mean, I don't know how you would understand what the value of Bitcoin is. How would you know? There's no way to know, because it's not, it's like understanding the value of the yen or the value of a dollar or a value of the Argentine peso or the value of gold or the value of a diamond. It's like you're just going to understand it compared to something else. And those things can change radically over time.
Yeah. Well, right? I think you understand currency based on what's backing it up. And the big issue many people have with Bitcoin is that nothing is backing it up.
Right. But then, of course, you can say, what's backing up the euro? Well, you've got the central bank that can...
The central banks of all the countries and...
Right.
Well, you said euro, so, you know. But I was going to say the militaries of those.
And you have it's a currency...
That was a European joke, Dad. You missed it.
Jeez, I missed it. I was thinking that what else defines a currency is that you can pay your taxes in it. And that's actually quite important.
Oh, that's a really interesting point.
Something else.
That's a very interesting point. You could pay your taxes in it.
Yeah, it's and that really does support currencies to a large degree, because the government says, no, I'm just not going to take Bitcoin to pay taxes. You're going to have to come up with something else.
Yeah.
So, okay, we don't want to get all hung up on Bitcoin. What we do want to say is that there's a big connection. Watch this segue.
Big
connection between owner earnings and value. And there is no owner earnings in a currency or in a commodity like gold or silver. They're just, which is, or a painting like a Picasso or a beautiful grand piano. There's no earnings there that you can count on in the future. And because there's no earnings that you can count on in the future, you have no way to define it except in terms of what some other person might pay for it in the future. That's all you have is a speculation that somebody's going to pay for it in the future. And this is where we try not to speculate. I mean, obviously we do speculation. I speculate in things all the time, but I know the difference between I'm speculating in something and hoping it goes up versus knowing to a high degree that I've got a purchase price far below the value of this thing.
Hmm.
That's such a huge...
I have a hard question.
Oh, okay.
because of our just now Bitcoin conversation. So you just said, looking at owner earnings, you can determine what to pay for a company because of what kind of cash you will get out of it at some defined point in the future. Did I just say that correctly?
Yeah. There are some companies you can do that with. There are many companies where I simply don't know. There's speculative. But some companies, not to beat Chipotle to death, but I can get a high degree of
confidence. High degree of confidence. Okay. Yeah. So here's the question, since we were just talking about currencies. Buffett often says that if you don't want to do the work and the practice to learn about individual companies and make your own investment choices, he recommends simply buying the U.S. stock index. And he says that is essentially a bet on the U.S., on the U.S. doing better in the future. Not at any given point, it's going to go down, it's going to go up, but overall, that over a long period of time, the U.S. will do better in the future. And Buffett thinks that's a good bet.
Yep.
Now, here's the question.
Yep.
Would then betting on the U.S. dollar be the same kind of bet? I'm betting that the U.S. is going to do better in the future. Therefore, a way to do that, in addition to, or maybe instead of buying the index, would be the currency itself.
Well, it's a really insightful question, and the answer is no. But it's a very, very insightful question. But the reason it's no is because if it's yes, then you have to make a very important assumption, and that is that the value of the dollar will rise with the increase in earnings of all of the companies in the United States.
Exactly.
And since the value of the dollar is massively intervened into by the Federal Reserve, who for their own clever reasons may choose to devalue the currency over time, which in fact they've done ever since the Federal Reserve was put into business back in the early 1900s, they have managed to devalue the U.S. dollar about 96% of the value of the US dollar is gone compared to where it was in 1918. So they have chosen over this long period of time to make the dollar buy about, you know, what 4 cents used to be.
Isn't that just inflation? And are you saying that because they sent
inflation?
Okay.
They are doing it on purpose to make people feel richer. That gets politicians elected.
Yeah.
That keeps stability. So they love to have about right now the Federal Reserve is loving to get about 2% inflation. They're actually intentionally creating 2% inflation, which cuts the value of your money in half in 36 years.
But that's quite low inflation historically, right?
Nonetheless, in 100 years, you've cut your money in half three times. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's like if you plan on having inflation over time and the inflation rate runs 3%, you're cutting the value of your purchasing power of the dollar in half every roughly, you know, 18 to 20 years. Mm-hmm. And you think about a lifetime, like sticking around 60 years as an adult, that's three times you get the value of your money cut in half.
Tell me about it. It is so freaking depressing.
I mean,
that's the reason I had to start learning investing, because exactly. of stupid inflation.
Exactly. I mean, just that level of inflation, nothing too onerous. And, you know, a dollar buys 50 cents in 20 years, and then it buys 25 cents in 40 years, and then it buys 12.5 cents in 60 years. So your original money you put under your mattress now buys 12.5 cents worth of stuff.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, of course, the earnings of the real earnings, the real dollar earnings of U.S. corporations has risen and risen and risen if the next 100 years is like the last 100 years. And that's what Buffett's betting on. He's basically saying, please do not put your money in cash. The way the government handles your cash will be terribly detrimental to your future retirement capability. And you need, therefore, to put it into the S&P 500 so that it is not decimated by government policy.
Hmm. I mean, that's what made me start this whole thing, is this realization. I just always thought of inflation as kind of like a whatever, like a normal, decent thing. Well, I don't really care. And when I found out this is the connection nobody ever says to you, what that means is that the value of your money goes down automatically without you doing anything wrong. And the only way to even stay even, not make money, not do better, the only way to even stay even is to take action on the money you have. Yeah. I mean, otherwise you're just sort of dribbling down year by year without doing anything wrong.
It's 100% right.
Like, I don't know why this isn't on billboards across the world.
It should be on billboards, but if your government isn't going to teach it in school because it's public schools and they don't want children to look at the destruction of wealth that happens if people count on...
Oh, but I mean, inflation happens whether or not governments intervene. It doesn't happen as evenly. Governments intervene to keep it as even and slow and non-rocky as possible.
Well, I totally agree that if you're a historian, you look back in time all the way to the Roman Empire, probably the empires before that, and you see that nearly without exception, there's inflation.
Yeah.
You see that they have the gold standard, and then you see that they start to cut the gold that's in the coins.
Yeah. They start to come up with silver coins
that right,
represent right. something a little different.
Exactly. And I mean, governments just can't help it. But it isn't actually in the nature of commerce. It's in the nature of governments and politicians. The nature of commerce doesn't require inflation. In fact, we can see that the United States fought inflation as a country extremely well for 100 years. From the time we were founded until the early 1900s, when we decided to get in the business of having a central bank, which could then print money to whatever degree it wanted to, that whole 120-year period of time, we had a couple of big spikes of inflation, but basically $20 of U.S. money would buy an ounce of gold for 100 years.
Are you serious? It's blowing my mind. I think I need to write a master's thesis on inflation.
Yeah, it's
so interesting.
It's really, truly extraordinary how little inflation there was in the United States' early history. And it wasn't until the Federal Reserve came in to solve the problems created by not having a central bank, by not being able to soften the blows of the economic cycle, right? We've got this boom and bust cycle that would happen. And so to soften those blows, they got together on a little island in Georgia and came up with this idea, and they stuck it through. And man, ever since then, the dollar has been going down in value against its buying power.
So you're saying that the virtuous cycle of inflation still happened, but just in much smaller increments?
Well, if I'm right, that's really close, that $20 of U.S. currency in 1800 and $20 of U.S. currency in 1900 would buy the same amount of stuff. It would buy an ounce of gold. Then there was basically almost no inflation for 100 years.
Wow. So I guess the next question would be, what would gold buy?
Well, gold.
Because I wonder if that changed.
Well, I mean, it's interesting when you can exchange a dollar for gold whenever you want to at any bank, which is what you could do all across the first 100 years of the United States. It's basically saying a dollar and gold are synonymous.
I guarantee you there are books on this.
Oh, yeah.
And if anyone listening is an economist who knows about the history of inflation in the U.S., please write us an email. questions@investedpodcast.com. Let us know.
Yeah. And this is not to say there's not really good reasons for having a central bank, which can then loosen up the money supply, which can then make cash available for people to expand their businesses. If dollars and gold are synonymous, you can't just print gold. And so where do you get some more money if you want to borrow it to start your business? So there's some really powerfully good things about central bank and fiat money, printed money, right? But one of them is not that they hold their value. Historically, they just don't.
Yeah, interesting.
You got it. They drive you into investing. You have to invest your money. And Warren basically says, if you're not going to learn this stuff, if you're not going to learn the ability to distinguish between a company that produces really good owner earnings and one that destroys owner earnings, then you really just need to buy SPY. It's the S&P 500 index, and be good with it. Just buy it every month. And in the long run, you'll be very glad you did. If you start when you're 25 years old, by the time you're 65 years old, you'll be quite wealthy in real terms, in real buying power terms.
If you buy the index is what you just said.
Buy the index and don't ever stop. And by the way, it's not that easy to buy it every month because sometimes it's going to be going down like a brick.
Yeah.
And everyone's going to be afraid of buying it. And if you don't do it then you're really failing to take advantage of the best time to buy. And of course, that's when people get freaked and they need their money, so they don't do it. So it's a great theory, just buy the SPY and never stop. But in practice, if you'd done that in 1929 and had the courage to buy it again in 1931, 30, 31, 32, you would have been buying the market at 400 and then you would have been buying it at 80 or 740. And that's really hard to do. It's like everyone is screaming, get out, get away from the market. It's going to go down to zero, you know? And of course, that's when our mentors started investing aggressively. That's when Ben Graham aggressively invested. And that's the history of Rule One type investing. So this is really interesting. We did go off on a tangent here, but I think it's a really good tangent.
It's so good. I'm so interested. I just love learning about this stuff. Like why choose certain kinds of investments and how do they relate to each other? The history of how... I don't know. Money changes.
Well, there's a lot buried in this very simple knowledge that you buy a company that you understand, which has a durable competitive advantage. Those few words right there are so loaded. They're like a nuclear weapon.
They're words from Charlie Munger that we've based all of our work together on.
Yeah. And they mean that you end up with a company which has such the ability to protect its profits and its margins and its pricing, like a Coca-Cola or somebody like that. And what that means is when inflation really cranks up, it's not just 3% anymore. It's like where it was in 1980, like running 12% a year.
God,
I mean, really ripping. When that's happening, Coca-Cola has so much marketing power, it has such a durable competitive advantage that it can raise its prices as the cost of sugar is going up 12% a year, which is its main ingredient. So it can pay that extra money, raise its prices, and people will still buy Cokes. Mm-hmm. Okay. And that, I mean, that's why we say durable competitive advantage, but the result is you have a kind of inflation-proof portfolio, much more so than the S&P 500. So you end up with the best companies of the biggest companies in America, which have incredible pricing power. And that's what we want. So that's what I'm teaching.
Love it. God, yeah, great sales pitch, Dad. Thank you. Hooked me a little bit there.
So we still didn't get to owner
earnings. But you know, it's such a huge conversation. I find it fascinating. And I'm glad that we talked about the underpinnings of it, because owner earnings is complicated and it's hard. And as we said last time, we wrote up the idiot's version of it, because Warren Buffett is the guy who has come up with this calculation that he has not fully explained. So you and I really talked and thought about what to put in our book, and we came up with our version of owner earnings. And that's what we want to
explain what Warren Buffett means when he didn't explain what he meant to explain.
Yeah, well, I think it's going to take us a few episodes, obviously.
I'm actually being facetious, because there's no way, if Buffett doesn't explain it, that I'm ready to explain it for him. There's no chance. But I'll get you in the
background. We are going to explain our calculation that I'm using for my investing.
And I feel pretty confident that if the company's relatively simple, our way of doing it will work pretty well. Hi guys, thanks for listening to Invested. If you enjoyed this episode and you want more information or to listen to additional episodes, visit our website at investedpodcast.com and sign up for my virtual workshop right there. Spots are definitely limited for this event. I'm not kidding, they really are. They sell out very quickly. So everything discussed on this podcast, by the way, is either my opinion or it's Danielle's opinion. And really important, it's not to be taken as investing advice, because I am not your financial advisor, nor have I considered your personal situation as your fiduciary. So remember that. You're on your own here. This podcast is for your entertainment and education only, and I really hope you enjoyed it.